Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll check out some new research from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system on Gulf War illness, and we'll talk to one of the newest Yellow Ribbon companies in Minnesota. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
We observe National Hispanic Heritage Month from September 15th through October 15th each year to celebrate the histories, cultures, and contributions of American citizens whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. September 15th is an important date because it marks the anniversary of the independence of five Latin American countries: Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. Our soldiers and airmen of Hispanic descent contribute daily to the success of our mission. Their unique cultural experiences add value to our organization and our communities. This value has inspired our organization to get involved in local Hispanic community events throughout the year across our state. The Minnesota National Guard continuously seeks the enlistment of soldiers that reflect the communities in which we serve. We strive to promote an environment that truly represents the demographics of the soldiers we lead.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system is Dr. Ron Bach, and we're going to discuss Gulf War illness. Doctor, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Doctor, can you give us a little background on your education and how you started and when you got to Minnesota?
Sure. I grew up in northeastern Iowa, and I went to Yale for college. Both my bachelor's degree and my PhD, I studied molecular biophysics and biochemistry. And so I started out as a basic scientist, and my first early part of my career, I was at Yale and Mount Sinai in New York. And then in 1991, I got the opportunity to come to the Minneapolis VA to continue my research. And that is where I've stayed for the last 25 years.
And your position there is a research health scientist, and you chair the Research and Development Committee. And you've been there for quite a while. What are there different types of research that you've conducted over those years, sir?
I've transitioned over the last 25 years from studying basic science, doing studies on blood coagulation, to what I'm doing now, which is studying Gulf War illness. So about 2000, I decided that I saw that there wasn't much progress being made in the area of Gulf War illness and understanding it. So I decided to give it a shot and go into that area of research. In order to do that, I had to learn how to do human studies. And so I taught myself how to do that. And so I've made the transition from basic to translational research, which is what I'm doing now. I'm studying the disease from bench to bedside, trying to understand the molecular basis of it and identifying therapeutic targets and then testing potential treatments for the illnesses, in this case, Gulf War illness.
Doctor, if we look at the history of the military from back to the Civil War to today's conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, if we look at Vietnam, there was Agent Orange. If we look back at Korea, there was probably a lot of frostbite and cold-related stuff. There were issues for every theater of operations, and this one has just developed over the last 25 or so years.
I think that many of the stresses that occur in theater have been manifest as various kinds of illnesses in the veteran population from the time of the Civil War, at least, where you had camp fever, and then in the First World War and the Second World War, they had names for the illnesses that the veterans came back with, where they didn't simply go away. And now we have the issues with Vietnam and the various deployments to the Gulf. And I think that they're all related on some fundamental level. That they're due to the stresses are a little bit different in each one of those deployments, but the aggregate effect is that you're having people living in a very toxic stew. And it's chemical toxins, it's stresses, it is the uncertainty of having people shoot at you. And all of these things, I think, can create a state of ill health, which in the case of the Gulf War, we refer to as Gulf War illness. But at its basis, I think that the illness that the first Gulf War has manifest is not significantly different than the more recent deployments in the OEF and OIF.
We're speaking to Dr. Ron Bach from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System on Minnesota Military Radio. Doctor, as I recall, Iraq had invaded Kuwait, and we, along with a coalition of partners, raised the force of military to go in and free Kuwait. And at the beginning of that, when Iraq was pulling out, they lit, I don't know, hundreds of oil wells on fire. And as I recall seeing that on CNN, there was smoke and black smoke everywhere, and must have been just a terrible situation for our soldiers to go in there and have to breathe that stuff. Is this the type of toxic soup that you're talking about?
This is part of the whole toxic stew. You have chemical stresses. It can be in the form of oil well fires or burn pits. It could be in terms of the kinds of inoculations that the soldiers were receiving, or the bad food that they were eating that was causing gastrointestinal problems. The heat, the poor sleep, all of these things are pro-inflammatory stresses. And I think that they all contribute to some degree to the bad health outcomes that we now refer to as Gulf War illness.
So a lot of those service members that served in that conflict came back, and I understand that they commonly reported symptoms such as pain, fatigue, mental fog, memory problems, headaches, insomnia, gastrointestinal problems. And I think the media and the public and maybe even the doctors were saying, is this real? Is it not real? And how do you approach that?
There was a real problem of trying to decide if it was something physiologic or is it just in your head. And the veterans of the Gulf War really had to fight very hard to get this to be recognized as something real. And so that's what we have now. The definition for Gulf War illness is that it's an unexplained chronic multi-symptom illness affecting those veterans from Desert Shield and Desert Storm. And it's defined by symptoms. The ones that you just mentioned are the most prevalent symptoms of what we call Gulf War illness.
Doctor, much like Agent Orange in Vietnam, it took years and decades for some of my fellow veterans to experience some of the problems from exposure to Agent Orange. And I know the VA and a lot of other people have been studying that, and now they've figured out it's called a presumptive disease. It's presumed to have been caused by that. Is there an explanation why it takes so long for these problems and this pain and fatigue to build up over the years?
I think that if you look at the survey studies from the VA Office of Public Health, you'll see that the symptoms that are being manifest, the people who have definable Gulf War illness, the percentage is continuing to increase as the years away from the deployment increase. For example, at 10 years post-deployment, the Office of Public Health estimated that about 29% of Gulf War veterans had definable Gulf War illness. And in 14 years post-deployment, the number was up to 36.5%. And the latest study, 20 years post-deployment, the percentage is up to 44%. So it is increasing with time. And that is characteristic of the results that we've found in our study that I'll talk about in a short while.
So, Doctor, I would guess that over that long period of time, it's a function of normal aging plus a function of having something affecting your body slowly over a long period of time.
It's a chronic illness, and chronic illnesses characteristically get worse with time. They do damage over time, and the pain, the symptoms get worse.
And a large portion of our veterans that served in the Gulf War were experiencing this, large enough so that it attracted you and you wanted to figure out why.
Exactly. The evidence was that the veterans who were deployed to the theater had worse health outcomes. They had more of these complaints than the veterans who didn't get deployed. And that says that it's something very real.
Doctor, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this special study that you've been working on that yields some potential blood biomarkers for Gulf War illness. We're speaking with Dr. Ron Bach on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Baseball is part of the fabric of American life. One of the American Legion's most successful programs through the years has been Legion Baseball. In Minnesota, we have over 325 teams in nearly every community in the state, involving about 5,000 student athletes. Five of our Minnesota teams have won the National World Series. This is Peggy Moon, past department commander of the American Legion. Check out your local team and come to a game. It's some of the best baseball you'll ever see.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking to Dr. Ron Bach from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System about Gulf War illness. And he's been a research health scientist there since 1991. And recently he's been working on a study to look into Gulf War illness from the service members that served in the first Gulf War almost 25 years ago. And Doctor, could you just explain to us one more time, Gulf War illness? We hear the term Gulf War syndrome, and we heard Gulf War illness. The syndrome really doesn't exist.
That was a theory that proved not to be correct. So we now refer to the condition as Gulf War illness.
And you got interested in doing this study because there were so many of these service members that were experiencing some problems, including symptoms like pain, fatigue, mental fog, memory problems, headaches, insomnia, those type of issues. So you wanted to find out, what's this based in and how can we track it down?
Right. Being a VA researcher, I thought I should be doing something specifically related to veterans' health, and I didn't see progress being made in this field. So that's why I chose to pursue this as the center of my research.
So, Doctor, how do you start something like this? How does this research project work?
It is, we're following a translational research model in which to study Gulf War illness, I decided the first thing we should do is just compare blood from Gulf War veterans who are Gulf War positive and those who are Gulf War negative. And the goal was to see if there are any differences in the blood of the sick and the healthy veterans. So we were looking for biomarkers in the blood that would be different between the two populations. And so the first goal was to discover biomarker differences, and then to take those differences and analyze the biomarker fingerprint that we saw, the differences between the sick and the healthy vets, and then to use that to hopefully gain some understanding of the underlying pathophysiology of Gulf War illness. And then ultimately, if that works, then you use that information to identify a therapeutic target, and you do a clinical trial of trying to treat the illness, targeting the mechanism that you've identified in your basic studies. And so that's how we proceeded in this blood biomarker study.
Now, Doctor, did you make the assumption that there was some type of a chronic inflammation in the body that might be the culprit?
No, we didn't start out with that hypothesis. We started out with the simple idea that there may be differences in the blood, and that if those differences exist, that we'll follow the evidence and it'll take us somewhere. And that's exactly how the research proceeded. We're just following scientific method. We looked at more than 100 different biomarkers in the blood, and comparing the sick and the healthy veterans, we identified 11 biomarkers that were different. Six had to do with blood proteins, and six had to do with blood cell concentrations. And in analyzing this biomarker fingerprint, the remarkable thing, which we had no idea in the beginning that this was going to be the result, all of these differences pointed to inflammation as a potential cause of the symptoms of Gulf War illness.
So then, as we said in the first segment, the combination of a chronic inflammation over a long period of time and normal aging just wears you out as you go.
Right. So the biomarker evidence said chronic inflammation. And the other remarkable thing that I wouldn't have guessed in the beginning is the inflammation, which I knew very little about until I got into this study, can be the cause of all the symptoms that are associated with Gulf War illness, the pain, the fatigue, the cognitive problems, the gastrointestinal problems. They've all been shown in other illnesses to be related to inflammation. So we seem to have a common underlying biochemical issue here that over a long period of time can create what we call Gulf War illness.
And doctor, I'm reading from an article that's in the Star Tribune, but it said, based on a study of 85 Gulf War veterans, you've developed a panel of blood markers that can verify the diagnosis of Gulf War illness with 90% accuracy. That's very high,
that's
isn't
pretty
it?
Good. Yeah.
So you're really onto something here.
I think the consistency of the evidence from the blood saying this all inflammation related, along with the connection to the symptomology of the disorder, says that we have something, I think, that is potentially an explanation and a therapeutic target for treating Gulf War illness.
We're speaking with Dr. Ron Bach from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System on Minnesota Military Radio, and we've been talking about Gulf War illness and his study that he seems to be closing in on some pretty interesting information. What's the next step, doctor?
We have started a clinical trial to try to prove this principle that inflammation is the underlying cause of the symptoms of Gulf War illness. And the trial is we're basically targeting inflammation as our therapeutic target. So it's called the Gulf War Illness Inflammation Reduction Trial. And the objective is to take veterans with Gulf War illness and either give them an anti-inflammatory drug, in this case a low-dose delayed-release prednisone, or a placebo, and see after a period of treatment if the symptoms get better, if the biomarkers in the blood get better, and if the health-related quality of life improves in the group receiving the treatment relative to the group receiving the placebo.
So this is really a method by which you can test your hypothesis that
Absolutely.
This was caused by chronic inflammation.
Absolutely. It's a proof of the principle. And if the hypothesis is correct, then we should see an effect based on reducing inflammation. It should improve those things that I just mentioned.
Doctor, this is pretty exciting. I know a lot of Gulf War veterans that are going to be real interested in how this clinical trial goes. Are you looking for volunteers? What do you need?
We are indeed. We are conducting this at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, and we are recruiting Gulf War veterans who meet our case definition for Gulf War illness. And so if veterans are interested in finding out more about this study and thinking about whether they want to participate, they can look it up on clinicaltrials.gov.
So our veterans out there that have served in that first Gulf War can go to clinicaltrials.gov and look for Gulf War Illness Inflammation
Reduction Trial.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a long one.
It is. It's and the contact information is in there, the description of the study, and a phone number for calling my study coordinator and beginning the process of evaluating whether you're eligible to participate in the study or not.
So if our listeners are interested in participating, they go to clinicaltrials.gov, look for the Gulf War Illness Inflammation
Reduction Trial.
Reduction Trial. Sorry, doctor, I forgot those last two. Or if all else fails, call the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System and tell them you're a Gulf War veteran and you'd like to participate in the clinical trial.
The number that they should call if they call the VA is 612-467-6351, and that will connect you with my study coordinator, Rebecca Rudquist, and she'll be able to do the evaluation, start the process of evaluating your eligibility.
So that number again is 612-467-6351, or just go to clinicaltrials.gov and look for Gulf War Illness, and all of the contact information is there. Doctor, I feel like there's some light at the end of this tunnel.
I believe there is. I think that according to what we've discovered so far, it looks like Gulf War Illness is a treatable condition and that you can actually make people's lives better if you target the inflammation.
Doctor, this has got to be a great piece of research. You've got to feel good about your work on this one.
I'm very excited. I'm amazed at how well the scientific process works.
Doctor, there's going to be a lot of our listeners, I think, calling in wanting to participate in that clinical trial, and I hope it proves out your theory.
Excellent.
Doctor, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much.
This is Dr. Ron Bach from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System talking about Gulf War illness. And once again, if you want to participate in the clinical trials, go to clinicaltrials.gov and look for Gulf War illness, or you can call his office at 612-467-6351. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Today's Yellow Ribbon Company Spotlight is Rochester Community and Technical College. RCTC provides accessible, affordable, quality learning opportunities to serve a diverse and growing community to include service members, veterans, and military families. RCTC's community is dedicated to providing services to support veterans and their families' educational goals. The Veterans Resource Center on campus provides a safe space to connect with other military students, provide assistance with military credit transfers, and staff counselors to assess a wide variety of support resources. Rochester Community and Technical College has been a Yellow Ribbon Company since September of 2010 and is honored and proud to be making a difference to service members, veterans, and their families. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to talk to one of the newest Yellow Ribbon companies in Minnesota. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
As you may have heard in the news the last month, our nation is making unprecedented progress in keeping its promise to the men and women who have served our nation and who now are facing homelessness. I am proud to say that Minnesota is doing even better than the nation as a whole. Since 2010, veterans' homelessness in Minnesota is down by 57%. Since January of last year, we have housed over 600 veterans experiencing homelessness in Minnesota. That tremendous progress is due to the many people and many factors. Most importantly, it stems from our commitment to working together faster, better, and smarter. Together, we can ensure that every veteran comes all the way home. Our job isn't finished until they do.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the Director of Military Outreach from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Annette Kuiper. Annette, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here today.
Well, that's a long title. Why don't we just call you the Yellow Ribbon Lady?
Absolutely. I oversee the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program for the state, so that would work too.
And how many communities and how many companies are we up to?
So we have 98 community networks in 219 cities and 26 counties across Minnesota, and we have 52 Yellow Ribbon companies.
And you've been to every one of them.
Absolutely. We've been working side by side with our communities and companies, and they truly are making a difference across the state.
So over the last how many years, you've worn out a couple cars probably.
Yes, I've been around the whole entire state, and now we're helping other states. This program has gone national and is being recognized as the best community capacity building program to support our military-connected residents in the nation.
Well, Annette, you brought a couple of guests with you today from one of our newest Yellow Ribbon companies. Would you like to introduce them?
Yes, from Elite Minnesota Power, which was our 50th Yellow Ribbon company to join our group of companies who make commitments to service members, veterans, and military families internal to their company and within their communities. It's the first company that has a headquarters in Duluth. So we're very excited to have Brian Maslowski and Stephanie Simmons here today to tell us a little bit about the commitments that Minnesota Power has made.
Brian and Stephanie, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stephanie, we're going to start with you. Were you on the team that went through the process of becoming Yellow Ribbon?
Yes, I was.
And how difficult was it to put together your plan?
The plan itself wasn't very difficult to put together. We had a lot of policies and procedures in place, and we were already doing a lot of what you needed to do to be a Yellow Ribbon company. So it was just kind of getting all of our ideas down on paper and running it through and getting approval from the state.
So kind of formalizing the process and getting buy-in from senior leadership.
Correct, yes.
And Brian, can you give us just a little background? Minnesota Power, who are you and what do you do?
Who are we? We are primarily an electric utility, like Annette said, based in Duluth, Minnesota. Service territory stretches from the Iron Range all the way down through Little Falls.
And what's the affiliation with Elite? It said Elite Minnesota Power.
Elite is the parent company of Minnesota Power. Minnesota Power has existed for over 100 years now, and Elite is the corporate parent because Elite stretches over multiple states and different types of businesses.
All right. Now, are you involved on the team to put this together as well?
Yes, sir.
And how long did that take?
It didn't take too long, actually. Less than a year. There was a lot of energy, a lot of really enthusiastic people that just wanted to make this happen. Good ideas, a lot of involvement with leadership, a lot of support and encouragement. So it went quick and it went relatively painless.
So Stephanie, over the course of that year, now you're close personal friends with Annette.
Absolutely.
Could you tell us a little bit about some of the best practices you have to hire and retain veterans?
Well, we are currently participating in a lot of veterans-focused job hiring fairs. And we are also working on training and informing our leadership and helping them, our hiring managers, figure out how to translate military skills into civilian skills to help fill some of the positions within our company. And we are also working on streamlining our process for our pay differential. And we've made it easier for our veterans and our service members to use tuition reimbursement along with their GI Bill.
We're speaking with one of our newest Yellow Ribbon companies, Elite Minnesota Power, on Minnesota Military Radio. And Brian, do you know how many veterans are employed by Minnesota Power?
Veterans, we have quite a few now. Our list we keep is all self-identified employees and retirees. And at veterans, we're at about 60 to 70-ish. And currently, I think we have 7 actively serving members that work for Minnesota Power.
And Stephanie, is Minnesota Power looking for more veterans?
Absolutely. We're always looking for more veterans and wonderfully qualified people for our workforce.
Now, Ned, is this the first big company in northern Minnesota that's joined the Yellow Ribbon Network?
Yes, it's really the first one headquartered in Duluth, and I look forward to partnering with them to bring in some other companies in the Duluth area.
Now, in the Twin Cities, there's a lot of Yellow Ribbon companies, and they interact with the Yellow Ribbon communities. Is there that type of support group up on the North Shore?
Minnesota Power has become a great partner within the community networks in that area. I was recently at the Grand Rapids Yellow Ribbon Network meeting on this past week, and they had Minnesota Power had representation at that meeting, which is exactly what we want our Yellow Ribbon companies to do, to connect in with our community networks and lend a hand and lend their employees to help support in their area.
So, Stephanie, while you were putting together your plan, did you learn what some of those communities were doing to support our veterans and their families?
We did learn a little bit about what the communities are doing, and we also joined some of the networks. And so we are getting emails and information when there is a need within the community. We're able to evaluate those emails and respond and help people out. I think Brian himself actually went out and helped a woman whose husband was deployed check her roof to make sure that, you know, she needed some roof repairs that were being recommended.
Now, Brian, I understand you were a longtime member of the 148th Fighter Wing in Duluth.
Yes, still am, actually. Still a member there. Been on there for almost 14 years now.
Now, from time to time, they're deployed. They just went to South Korea recently, a bunch of your fellow airmen from up there. How does Minnesota Power support those airmen when they're deployed?
Minnesota Power is doing their best to interact with the base as much as they can, being involved with what they can. Mostly revolves around our employees and spouses of members that are deployed. That's where we get a lot of our information, a lot of our closest connections.
So if you've got a Minnesota Power employee that happened to have been deployed to South Korea, then Minnesota Power has a group that supports those families while that member is deployed.
Yeah, we've worked to develop a fairly large volunteer corps so that when something comes up like this, we just send out the word that this is happening, needs help, there's an event going on. If anyone can, you know, lend a hand or do whatever, they're there for us.
Stephanie, are there some military support community initiatives that you're involved in?
We're currently actually working with a couple of our employees who are involved rather heavily with the 23rd Veteran, which is a grassroots homegrown nonprofit that's helping connect veterans with PTSD with other veterans with PTSD and get them some mentorship and help them find resources. And we're also working with another employee who is part of the Minnesota Warriors hockey team in Duluth, which is a hockey team for disabled vets. So that's one of the things that we're doing. And then we also have some members on Team Red, White, and Blue.
And Brian is a member of the 148th and also an employee of Minnesota Power. Is that a pretty good combination? Are they supporting you pretty well?
Yeah, it works really well. I've never had to choose between stepping up and doing what I need to for the Air Force and Minnesota Power. Really good chain of command above me on the civilian side that supports all the initiatives that I'm working on with the Air Force.
So no complaints from Minnesota Power if you're deployed for a week or a month. They just fill in behind you and
none,
come back to your job just the way you're supposed to.
Exactly, none at all. They recognize that it's growing me as a corporate citizen as well with leadership training and development, and all the types of exposure I get with the military is useful at Minnesota Power.
Some great experience on those deployments, so you can bring that back and put it to work for Minnesota Power.
Yes, sir.
We have to take a short break. We're talking to Minnesota Power, Brian Maslowski and Stephanie Simmons on Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back with more on Minnesota Power. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with some representatives of the newest Yellow Ribbon Company in Minnesota, Elite Minnesota Power, and we've had Brian Maslowski and Stephanie Simmons in the studio with us, along with the Yellow Ribbon lady, Annette Kuiper, Director of Military Outreach, Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. It's easier to call you the Yellow Ribbon lady, Annette. Stephanie, we know that Brian serves in the Air National Guard with the 148th, but I understand you're a longtime military spouse.
Yes, I am. My husband actually just recently retired from the 148th. He's got over 23 years of service, and I've been with him for almost 20 of those years.
Well, what are you going to do with that extra weekend a month?
We fill it with a lot of kids' activities.
So you're happy that he served, but now that you're happy that he's done as well.
Absolutely. It's wonderful to have him home again.
All right. Now, you've been involved with this Minnesota Power undergoing the process to become Yellow Ribbon. Has it changed anything at the company, or is it just formalized what's going on before?
I think it's mostly just formalized what's going on before, but it's also brought in awareness, and it's let people know within the company that our leadership does support them as, you know, they go out on deployments and that we're there for their families. So it's kind of, we're trying to build on this culture that we already have and make it a little bit more robust.
All right, Brian, I've got to ask you this question. The state of Minnesota has a wonderful training facility up at Camp Ripley. It's one of the best in the country. And I understand that General Nash has told us over the years that he wants to go green. It means he wants the best power source he can have. And I understand Minnesota Power has helped with that.
Yeah, a little bit. Minnesota Power has had a long relationship with Camp Ripley through conservation efforts for years. And just, well, a few years ago after, actually, they decided that they're going to pursue a solar venture there. So they worked on developing a 10-megawatt solar farm, which is very close to completion. There was a slight bump in the road with a recent tornado that went through there, but minor damage to the solar panels, and they plan to commission it by the end of the year.
Annette and I were just up to Camp Ripley and saw that the roof of one building and the roof of part of another building came off, and it looked like part of that landed right on your solar field.
Yes, it did.
So it didn't do too much damage?
Not too much. They estimate under 5%, so.
And is that scheduled to be active by this year sometime?
By year end, yes.
Do you know how big is that solar field? Just in general? It looks like it's huge.
I don't know how many acres, but it's pretty big, yes.
Yeah, it's taking up a lot of room up there, and that's going to be pretty exciting to have that put in place. Annette, you've brought in another great company. I don't know how you keep doing this. How many years you've been doing this now?
7 years. Been at it.
And this looks like a great one. You've got a footprint now in northern Minnesota. You're going to expand up there along with Minnesota Power?
Yes, we look forward to partnering with the Chamber up in the Duluth area to get education out about our Yellow Ribbon companies and how to participate in that program. And it's great to have Minnesota Power up there as a partner to showcase how their action plan looks and the process they went through and help mentor other companies up in that area.
So, Stephanie, what you probably don't know is you're not done with Annette yet, because she's going to show up on your doorstep and she's going to want some help to recruit some of these other companies. Are you ready for it?
Absolutely. She's more than welcome.
Brian, how about that?
I second that.
So when Annette shows up and goes like this and waves her hand, you're going to say, okay,
I'll be there.
Jump, and you're going to say, how high?
Exactly.
Annette, you're going to have to take it easy on these Yellow Ribbon companies.
I know. They've been such wonderful partners to us.
Well, Brian and Stephanie, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio. And Annette, we got about a minute left, and it's all yours. What's going on?
Well, I just want to say that twice a year we bring our Yellow Ribbon companies together to share best practices and build relationships. And our Yellow Ribbon Company seminars are really an opportunity for our companies to showcase all of their great work. And the companies like Minnesota Power are doing amazing things, helping us with our mentoring program for our employment initiatives, sharing their best practices with other companies, and connecting with our community networks. And it's truly making a difference across Minnesota.
And even up in northern Minnesota, when people are deployed, we've got Yellow Ribbon communities and Yellow Ribbon companies out there taking care of the families while they're gone.
Yes, and it all goes toward setting our objective that no military family, veteran, or service member feels isolated or alone, that we're connecting them to resources and that we can help support them.
Well, Annette, thanks for bringing in another great interview to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, and thank you to Minnesota Power for their great support.
That was our Yellow Ribbon lady, Annette Kuiper, the Director of Military Outreach for the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, and Brian Maslowski and Stephanie Simmons from Minnesota Power, sharing their story of becoming a Yellow Ribbon company on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is Lisa Klink, the immediate past president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, but still the Sibley County Veteran Service Officer. Lisa, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me. Boy, that was a mouthful.
Well, your one-year term has ended. It was it went quick, didn't it?
It went really fast, yes, but it was very enjoyable.
Did you learn a lot, and were you able to help teach your fellow county veteran service officers a lot over the last year?
You know, I definitely learned a lot. They taught me a lot, and hopefully I taught them some things as well. So I think it was a win-win for sure.
And I understand that your twice-per-year seminars, when you get them all together, that's heavy on training and notifying them of all kinds of new information that they can use to help our veterans.
Definitely, definitely. We had a great training conference this year. We had breakout sessions. We ended up having, I think, 14 different classes available to the CVSOs to tailor to their needs. It was really a great conference overall.
And once again, as we've said all year when you've been on the show, if there's anything a veteran needs, any resources they need, any kind of help they need, all they need to do is go visit their county veteran service officer, find their DD-214, their discharge form, bring it in, get it registered, and even if you can't find it, go see your county veteran service officer because they might be able to help you find it.
Exactly. Definitely go see the CVSO first off.
And they should go visit whether they need help now or not, because if they get registered and get it there, if they do need help sometime in the future or if their family needs some help, then everything will be on file and you'll be ready to get to work.
Exactly. And it makes our job easier for sure.
Well, Lisa, I understand we're going to talk about something new today. It's called the Next Generation Agent Orange. I've heard of that, but I'm not quite sure what it is. Can you explain it?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of it stems from what we talked about on previously sessions about burn pits. But one of the things that they're finding in these burn pits is dioxin. And, of course, these are the burn pits that, you know, everything was thrown into it. We're talking computers, plastics, glass, jet fuel, oil, and now they're looking at even dioxin in of itself. So, and what was in Agent Orange? What is the thing that we hear about from the Vietnam era is the dioxin and chemicals. So that in and of itself is something that I think has really kind of thwarted people in realizing that not only have we made this error, you know, in a different way through these burn pits. So here's all these chemicals getting mixed together, and now we're being exposed to those in the lungs, especially being in, and it's coming out in different ways and different symptoms, but I think we're seeing it mostly through those burn pits in the lungs and some issues with skin.
So just so our listeners understand, when we talk about burn pits, we're talking about Iraq and Kuwait and Afghanistan and some of those temporary bases. When they had garbage and things to throw out, they found an area maybe too near to those bases and threw everything in there and just lit it on fire and tried to get rid of it that way.
Correct. And one of the issues is that some of these countries just don't have the waste and sanitation system that the U.S. has. And with the significance of the different types of material we have, you know, they did this, and unfortunately it brought a host of problems with it by burning it. So
by burning it, they had a bunch of this toxic fumes in the air, and the troops were close enough, they were breathing in some of that stuff. What kind of symptoms might someone have if they were exposed to this?
You know, one of the things that we're really seeing, and it starts out as simple, maybe it's simple bronchitis, You know, initially it'll start out as bronchitis. We're seeing asthma coming out through this, you know, adults getting asthma in their 30s and 40s. We're seeing bronchitis. Also, we're seeing pneumonia, a significant case of pneumonia. Like, they don't just get it once in the season, they're getting it twice in the season, or they're getting more flu-like symptoms. So you're seeing a lot of that. And what they're finding is, you know, they're going in for these tests for bronchitis, they're getting their lungs x-rayed, and then they're looking in their lungs and they're seeing that there's spots in their lungs, and even looking at the potential of, okay, what is in their lungs? Does it look like glass? Does it look like plastic that's been filtered through the lungs and now it's hardened? So, and they're even talking about potentially going to do biopsies, and that's, you start talking about lung biopsies, you get a little concerned about that, but, you know, to identify what those chemicals and what those breakdowns are in their lungs. So you're really seeing that initially, that showing of the breathing, the asthma, you know, people getting winded. You know, 30-year-olds getting winded going upstairs, and they shouldn't, you know, just their level of oxygen capacity within their lungs. So those are just some of the symptoms that they're seeing, you know, that are coming about. You know, I think I've even heard some even respond to somebody, I've seen an increase of people being diagnosed with fatty tissue on their liver. You know, a 30-year-old, why is a 30-year-old getting diagnosed with the tissue around their liver? So there's some things that are just, there's so many unknowns with this, but it's just, it's something that we need to be aware of. And if you as a veteran are finding these things of those, that error, you need to go see your county veteran service officer, and we need to make sure that you're getting the proper health care, and two, that you're filing a claim for these conditions.
Very good. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you.
This is Lisa Klink, the immediate past president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officer and the Sibley County Veteran Service Officer. We have two mentions today. First, join the Medal of Honor Convention Twin Cities for the official Twin Cities Welcome Ceremony at U.S. Bank Stadium on Wednesday, October 5th at 10 a.m. This will be the official kickoff to the 2016 Medal of Honor Convention and an opportunity for all Minnesotans to welcome the Medal of Honor recipients to Minnesota and honor their service and sacrifice. To learn more, visit mohtwincities.com. And we've got a notice from the Minnesota Department of Revenue today. They say that over 2,400 military service members still eligible to claim the 2012 military tax credit. That's a credit for military service in a combat zone for service in 2012, and that will expire for most qualifying service members on October 15th. The tax credit is $120 per month or partial month served. You have to file Form 990-99, credit for military service in a combat zone. And you can find more information on that at www.revenue.state.mn.us. And once again, applications must be postmarked by October 15th. So look that up today if you're one of those 2,400. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Dr. Ron Bach from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Brian Maslowski, Stephanie Simmons, Lisa Klink, Commissioner Larry Shelledo of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk to Secretary of State Steve Simon about absentee voting for our veterans and our military. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.